Hello, everybody, and welcome to Poogie TV podcast number 70. My sinuses are acting up, and I haven't been able to replace my mic, so I sound like shit. So hopefully I won't have to talk that much. But joining me are the same people as last podcast, SBF and Malice. Say hi, guys.
Hey.
Hello.
And this is the first podcast that's going to debut day and date on iTunes, Google Play, and YouTube. Probably on Thursday, after I edit it a little bit. In the past week, not really a lot has happened, but something did pop up on Twitter that I think we should talk about. Chad, you've sold your Xbox One.
Yeah, so last week I saw a thread over on Reset Era about trading values for the Xbox One. And GameStop was offering $140 credit or $112 in cash. And that's a big increase because I think the previous one was like $50. So I'm not sure why they're increasing it, but I had actually wanted to sell my Xbox One during Christmas of last year, but I didn't really want to go through the hassle of dealing with Craigslist. And
2017?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, because I figured that's around the time when people would like want an Xbox One or trying to buy things for their kids and stuff.
Right, right.
And it was also the same time I got my PlayStation 4, and at that point, my Xbox One, it really became redundant. So basically, after I got my PlayStation 4, my Xbox One was really just used as a media player.
Right.
The Xbox One handles poorly encoded ripped video like way better than the PlayStation 4. Better than PlayStation 4, better than PlayStation 3. I don't know why, but it's
because it's based on like Windows or something.
Yeah, but I'm talking about even just the default media player on the Xbox One.
Well, that the operating system really dictates which codecs are available, right?
Yeah, although there was like this really weird thing where like PlayStation 3 supported Windows media video only because it became a standard related to Blu-ray.
Oh, yeah. That's funny.
Yeah. But one of the things I actually want to give Microsoft some credit for is that they make the process of getting rid of the Xbox hardware pretty painless. So the two biggest things people will probably care about is what's going to happen to my games and what's going to happen to my save files. And like most modern game, consoles, all the game purchases are tied to the account. So you can easily log into another machine and play your games. And actually on the Xbox One, as long as it's online, like if you go to a friend's house and you log in with your profile, as long as the console can connect to the internet, it'll give you access to all your games.
Right.
But you can only have one console that's designated as your home console where you can play your games offline.
Right.
But still pretty.
That still makes sense, though.
Yeah. But the really cool thing is that when it comes to save files, Microsoft is actually the most consumer friendly. So every game gets 3 gigabytes of free cloud storage. Hmm. So unlike PlayStation Plus, you don't have to pay for a game cloud saving. It's just built into every game and it's tied to your console. Well, it's tied to your account. Yeah. And another thing is that all the DRM on the Xbox is built in such a way that I have an external hard drive that I had all my games on saved to. And if eventually I buy an Xbox One, I'm never going to buy an Xbox One again. But if I did, I could just plug my external hard drive in and get all my games back.
Well, you're not going to hop on board the One X for all those awesome One X exclusive games and features?
Yeah. The One X was when I really was like, well,
what's the point of all this?
I don't want to call this too soon because I've tried to call the death of the Xbox too soon before. But when they priced the Xbox One X at $500, to me, that was a clear sign that came from Microsoft of, we'll let you build this fancy hardware to try to gain market share, but we're not going to subsidize it. So,
right.
That console really should have been $400. basically selling it at cost, to me, that's like a big warning sign.
Well, there's nothing, I mean, we've talked about this, it's kind of like the same as the rest of the Xbox. It's like, why would I buy a 1X? Like, they haven't sold it to me. Like, Sony's done a pretty good job of selling the PS4 Pro or Plus, whatever it's called. That's like, a lot of games have been getting updates, and I can like probably list a couple updates I know to titles that they're graphically enhanced for the PS4 higher end system. I don't know, like, I guess Minecraft's in 4K, but are yeah. people looking forward to that?
Ooh. Well, you still run into the game issue. And so it's like, even though the Xbox One X has much more powerful hardware, let's say you want to play a game like Nier Automata, like, yeah, that game would probably perform better on the Xbox One X, but it doesn't exist on the Xbox One at all. So it's like, you're paying to get a performance edge, but if the game doesn't exist, there's no reason for the performance edge. So, I mean, it's complicated. Of course, being like a big Sony guy, you know, I wouldn't be too sad if Microsoft left the gaming console market entirely. But still, I feel like they could do a little bit better with their fan base and with games.
I agree. You think they would have learned, because didn't the Xbox One debut at $500? And then the PS4 came in and was like $400?
Yeah, well, it debuted at $500 because it came with Kinect. And like,
no one wanted it.
Yeah, here's the classic story of why something failed at Microsoft. bad middle management and misreading data. And so with the Xbox 360, they had data that showed that more people used their Xbox 360 to watch Netflix and to do all the view all those media apps like Hulu and stuff than they did to play games. And that totally dictated how they handled the Xbox 360 successor. Mm-hmm. They focused on the wrong thing. And that's pretty much why the Xbox One is doing so badly.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, it comes down to games, and we talked about that a lot in the last one. So I didn't want to really beat a dead horse, but I thought it was humorous to bring that up a little bit.
Yeah. Although the crazy part is that now I'm researching Android TVs because I still need something that'll play media files off my media server to my TV. That's pretty painless.
Mm. Yeah, the NVIDIA Shield is probably the way to go.
Yeah, I'll probably end up getting maybe that or just some cheap Chinese knockoff on eBay. Right. Like all I really need it to do is just to play like a wide range of poorly encoded video files.
How much pirated anime do you have, Chad? I could theoretically embed this live podcast on the site, but haven't really thought about doing that yet.
Let's listen live for the fun version and then get the cleaned up version later.
The cleaned up version, yeah. Just give everybody some conspiracy theories. All right. Okay. So, yeah, Mew was released for Pokemon Go. I don't really play it anymore, but I'm looking forward to attempting to get it after I get back on my feet, after my ankle heals. Not really much to discuss there. I just figured I'd bring it up in case anybody has any wide-reaching thoughts on Pokemon Go they want to get off their chest. No? Okay.
If I wasn't more of a hermit, I would play Pokemon Go. Like, I don't know what else to say. Like, that yeah, wasn't to give me the guy else.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's really built for... I play it mostly solo, but there's definitely like awkwardness when you show up at like there's like a bunch of you know nerds crowded around a statue or something, and you're all like, "Yeah, we're all here for the same thing, but we're not going to talk to each other."
It kind of requires that you get out and about a little bit, and when your lifestyle doesn't dictate and allow you to do that, the game is real not fun to play.
Yeah. That's for sure. It really only works in cities, too. I can't imagine how you'd play it in a rural
You can
area.
say it. I mean, me and Joe, we're hillbillies. We live in the South.
I mean, even in I'm sort of, you know, suburbia, commercialish area, kind of all around. And I think there were, when it first launched, I think there were two or three nearby little Pokestops where you could drop by and do whatever. But yeah, like there wasn't a great deal here. Now, I'm sure if you're in a big city that's, you know, major metro area, I'm sure you're gonna find a pile of more stuff and a pile of more places to drop by. But
For sure.
I mean, just wherever you are, you've got to be able to get out and about, and they rely on people that are doing that.
Yeah, honestly, like I play it a lot, but most of the time when it's running, I'm just walking around and hatching eggs. The PokeWalker accessory that I got makes that really easy because you don't have to keep your screen on like you do for the normal game, which is S9. So if you just like walk back and forth between two spaces, you still get a little gameplay out of that. But overall, yeah, you're right. Cool. I have a note here about PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds and Fortnite. I don't really play those. I figured, do either of you? You guys aren't really mainstream game players that much, right?
My brother pretty regularly plays Battlegrounds. I don't think he's mentioned anything about playing Fortnite, but certainly, like, you know, weekend evenings or whatever, I'll see him pop online and be playing Battlegrounds with a bunch of his people he knows online, and he enjoys it and continues playing it regularly. So
You haven't been swayed by Fortnite?
I have like an old refurb ThinkPad that came with Windows Vista on it several years ago that I got
That sounds awful.
for it cost me 18 months of my life, but
Oh my
otherwise no dollars. I got it the grad school I went to gave it to everybody, and then once you graduated they let you keep it.
God.
Yeah,
Interesting.
so
So
it doesn't run a lot of games.
that's funny. I guess they've started putting out smartphone versions, which is causing schools to implode or something like
Yeah.
that
It's just the latest super popular thing that everybody's got to do.
I saw. Yeah, it's funny the kinds of fads that, you know, take over schools for a month or two, and then, you know, 10 years later you're like, hey, remember that thing? Oh yeah, that was funny.
Yeah, that's what I thought Pokemon was going to be. Didn't
Shut
work
the
out
fuck
that
up, Chad.
way.
But I have played Fortnite a few times. I thought it was okay. I didn't really get into it because I don't really play online a lot. But I thought it was fine for what it was. I'm definitely not going to play it on smartphones because I don't play any games on my phone anymore.
You're a console purist.
Well, sort of. It's really just that the market for smartphones, when they went to in-app purchases and these loot box type systems, it really killed the creativity that was in the market. I was in that the iOS market, like I think 6 months after the App Store launched, and it was an amazing time for games. Like you'd wake up every day and find like 10 like really cool games to play. But the market realities just kind of weighed in on it and just kind of killed the creativity in that market.
I mean, I'm sure there's still like stuff like Monument Valley and that kind of thing. Those kind of like one purchase games where you buy the game and then you play it. But it is pretty rare for sure.
Yeah.
But it's all about attention spans, I think, you know.
Yeah, and I definitely have ADD, so.
Cool. Well, that's more discussion I thought than we'd get out of that. After that, Nintendo put out a bunch of DLC last week, updates for Fire Emblem Warriors, Pokken Tournament, Kirby Kirby got some characters from Dreamland 2, which I loved back in the day. And what was the other one? Oh, they put out two new outfits for Mario and Odyssey. So very busy day. I think Kotaku, or very busy week. I think Kotaku speculated that the development teams at Nintendo had some kind of arbitrary March end time limit or something for their DLC. So they were like, oh shit, just put it all out there at the last week. But it was pretty, if you look at it and then you compare it to, like, 6 or 7 years ago, it's night and day, really. So Nintendo's finally gotten on the train there, mostly for the better. I don't think they've done anything too egregious. The Fire Emblem smartphone game is a little pay-to-win bullshit in places, but other than that, I think it's mostly been on the nose. What do you guys think?
Well, I was curious. The DLC that's on the Switch, is the majority of that DLC free or really cheap?
The Kirby update with two extra characters is free. I believe Fire Emblem Warriors stuff is part of a season pass, which Nintendo has done for Xenoblade 2, Breath of the Wild, and Odyssey, I think. I don't know if Odyssey had a season pass.
I don't recall there being any extra content for Odyssey.
That's true. There wasn't. They made a big point about Luigi's Balloon DLC being like a surprise out of nowhere. So that one didn't have it, but they're going on this season pass thing a little more. And the Pocket stuff, I think you pay individually for each character you want to buy. So it's kind of like a wide range of purchase types, I guess.
Yeah. And I've always been kind of been more cool with DLC for fighting games, because it seems like you get a lot of value out of it. I haven't really played Pokken, but I did buy like the majority of the DLC that came out for Smash.
Yeah, see, I had to buy everything that came out for Smash because I was like, I want the complete game, as complete as possible. The only ones I didn't buy were most of the Mii outfits. I just didn't care that much. But I definitely got all the stages and all the characters. Because, like, if you're having, like, an impromptu, like, I mean, the Switch is going to make this much more possible. But, like, if you're like, oh, let's just throw on Smash, and, like, one of the people you're with really got used to one of the DLC characters, or, I don't know, something like that, and you didn't have it, like, that's kind of a lame situation. Or if there's like a non-game in your group, but they're like a big Final Fantasy fan. They love Final Fantasy VII. Like, if you had Cloud, that might be able to get them to play, that kind of thing. That was just how I thought of it back in the day.
Yeah, I've generally found, certainly even for these games, that the DLC offerings and prices, even like looking back at, Fire Emblem, the other game, Hyrule Warriors.
Right.
Was it almost seemed like
for that game.
That game was such good value, it almost physically hurt. Mm-hmm. Like, I put so many hours in that game, it was crazy. And I'm struggling if I want to rebuy it when it comes out again.
the definitive edition or whatever on Switch?
Yeah, I never bought any of the DLC for the Wii U release. Mm-hmm. But with this version, it comes with it all.
And all the DS 3DS content too.
Yeah, I'd lie if I say I wasn't tempted.
But
I think a lot of this is tied down to their fiscal year runs through March.
Yeah, that's what the speculation was about.
I imagine that they're running those costs out and go ahead and getting that all in the books for March, and then starting fresh with, and having all that done before the new fiscal year starts.
Right. I was going to say something, but I forgot. I think it's overall a positive turn. Oh, I remember what I was going to say. In honor of you, Joel, I bought Zeo Drifter today on Switch. I had it on 3DS, but I didn't beat it. So I bought it and started playing it again today. just as simple and nice and stripped down and fun as I remember it being.
It's just a cute little game. I think I played the Steam release a while back. That's how I saw it a handful of years ago.
Well, I don't know how long it's going to go on, but it's on half off sale right now. If everybody wants to check it out, and I promise I'm not being paid for a TUI plugs, even though I've advertised their Kickstarter and now this game. Yeah, it's a nice indie company that I think we should support.
Indeed.
All right.
And I actually had that game. It was free on PlayStation Plus. So I just never really got around to playing it.
I forgot they did a PS4 version.
No, I think I have that. I have Mutant Muds as well.
I got Mutant Muds Collection on Switch a while ago. I haven't been able to play it yet, though. Since the last podcast, their Kickstarter was funded. They're at like, I think like 103%. So I don't think they're going to get any of their stretch goals. I know the big one that I wanted was Grant Kirkhope doing the music, but that doesn't seem like it'll be the case. But who knows? Maybe they'll come to an agreement after the Kickstarter ends. But I'm glad that game is coming to Switch. We need more games with level editors in the hands of children, I feel. It's just a good thing all around to like start the creative process, you know, as young as possible, I feel like.
Yeah.
Yeah, they can make levels, and then they can also make little things with cardboard soon.
And hit themselves in the eyes with rubber bands. Yeah, it's going to be great.
We did that when we were kids, and we're all okay. We had rubber band guns.
And slingshots.
I think slingshots were a little before my time.
All you had to do is find a stick and get a rubber band. Anything.
I mean, as far as it being like a thing, you know, all the little boys had.
Oh, right. Sure.
Like that was long gone by the time. Even when I was growing up, that was not a thing anymore.
Sure. But it's something you might have had in like a toy box or something.
Yeah.
Joel, you had two topics you posted, but the last one I had listed was PAX East is this weekend. It actually starts on Thursday this year, so it's going to run for 4 days instead of three. I've been going to it since 2012, the year I moved to Boston. It's been fun every year. This year I only have a pass to Saturday because I want to see the Mega 64 panel. It's always the highlight of my year. Probably won't get to play a lot of games on the show floor, but I'm not sure exactly what there is. I'll just wander around, I think. PAX East is weird because sometimes companies use it to like announce a ton of shit. I remember when I met up with Kumiko 1 year for PAX East. We went to a Capcom panel and they had like six new game announcements or something. And then like the next year, Nintendo just didn't show up at all. So it's like, it's that weird, like in between GDC and E3 where companies don't really know if they should hold off for E3 yet or do anything. But if something was going to be announced at PAX East this year, what would you guys expect it or want it to be? Chat.
Eternally, I want Phil Fish to come back and announce Fest 2 is still in development.
Dude, that's been canceled for like 5 years.
Yeah, and last I heard he was like a DJ or something in Nashville. I'm like, what is going on?
That sounds about right.
That sounds as ridiculous as that guy tended to act.
Yeah, but in general, like any type of indie game, because I kind of feel like an indie game that might be a good place to get a big showing since the major companies probably aren't going to announce anything. And, you know, you don't want to get out in E3 where the major companies are announcing things.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. The indie mega booth is always probably the best part of the show floor just because it's like all the indies, I think, like buy into it and they buy a big space on the show floor and they have like tiny little kiosks for each indie game. Basically just like a desk and a monitor with the controllers. And it's gotten big in the last couple of years. And I know that I always find something good there. The lines are always really short. Basically, if you go on Sunday, which is like the less populous day, there's like no line at all. You can just like walk up to each kiosk and just play immediately, which is awesome. So yeah, indies at PAX, that's the way to go. That brought up something. Phil Fish's game, Fez 2. Mm-hmm. How far along was that before he canceled it in a fit of, I don't even know what it was, like just like petty rage or something? I wasn't following the story that well at that time.
I'm not sure. It was a secret announcement at GDC. I think there was like some type of kind of conference. I can never remember the name of it, but basically at the end of it, they had like a secret announcement of there's going to be Fez 2. So I'm not sure how far along he was.
Was it just like a logo or was there footage?
There was a title, something like a title screen.
Okay.
Kind of just showing off more of like, you know, the 40 aspect of the world and stuff. But that was pretty much the only footage that he showed. But if there are some, there are two indie games that I'm really looking forward to this year. One is Spelunky 2. I love Spelunky. It's a randomized platformer. I don't think anybody expected they would make a sequel to it, so I'm really interested to see that. And the other one is actually a PC and Xbox One exclusive. It's The Last Light. It's a cyberpunk 16-bit game.
That's the one that Resetera doesn't like, right?
I don't really care what they like. I mean, I've gotten to the point now where I will read the first post on Resetera, the original post, and I don't read anything underneath it. And my mental health has been demonstrably better.
Sounds like what you should do on YouTube. But wait, Resetera is a forum, so that doesn't really...
Yeah, so I read the original posts. And like, I hope it's got all the info I'm looking for because I refuse to read anything else.
Oh, I had a NeoGAF story. I guess I should tell that after Joel's finished. Joel, any PAX East announcements to look forward to?
I'll be honest, I haven't really paid that much attention, but I think I'm along the same lines as you guys are. I like more interesting indie games popping up on the Switch eShop, and any interesting sort of bigger budget games that I haven't previously been able to play, I'm always pro port. You know, all of the non-Nintendo stuff, it's, you know, been, as someone, I haven't owned a non-Nintendo console since the PS2, just for various life reasons. Mainly, like, it's got the games I like, but I also, you know, schooling and other stuff has sucked up a lot of free time over the years.
But, no, I get you.
Like, that was my big tipping point in getting the Switch, was like, oh, what, I can play Doom now? Yeah, I'm totally getting it now. And then also, here's a pile of other stuff that is available. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'll certainly scan the headlines and be like, ooh, that's neat. Like, I wouldn't mind seeing some Devolver Digital stuff pop over. Like, if I could drop $3 or $4 and get Downwell on the Switch, you know, I'd be super happy.
Oh, Downwell.
That game's the best $3 I spent in a while.
That would work, though. That's a game where it's like a vertical aspect ratio, right?
I'd still, yeah, I think the playable area is pretty narrow.
Yeah, so that would work well when you... rotate the Switch to its side, you know.
That'd be really neat. I know there's a pinball game, I think, on the Switch that does that. Mm. And then the that Arcade Archives Punch-Out does the same thing.
Yeah, a lot of the ACA games do. Yeah, bring on the indies. And I do think it's cool that It kind of started with the Wii U, but then it died out because the Wii U install base died out. But you started seeing a lot more like Nintendo being back in, like, at the end of the game trailer, the logos at the bottom, those have started to pop up more and more. Bethesda's support has been huge, for sure. I'm still looking forward to getting Doom. I was about to buy it one day, and then Chad started shit talking it, so I didn't.
You still should have bought it. I think I told you still buy it.
Didn't you get it on the when it on sale and you were supposed to pick it
Yeah,
up?
I'll get it next time it's on sale. I'm trying not to buy games until I beat some of the games I have right now. So,
Yeah, I saw you pop up on Breath of the Wild earlier.
Yes. I saw you were on Skyrim.
Yeah, this little Skyrim game I've heard a little bit about.
Is any good?
I would say that I'm several hours in. I would not say that it is life changing, but I'm enjoying my time with it so far. I'm still adjusting to a lot of it, but it's good. I'm enjoying it.
That's good to know. Maybe someday I'll get to it.
I've had a couple of weird little occurrences. I've tried to snatch a little video for,
Oh
but
yeah.
a little just trying out the little video clip capture thing.
Right.
I was
Has to be
walking
like
along.
right off, right after.
Yeah, I was walking along on the side of a cliff, and all of a sudden, a goat came tumbling down the cliff at like breakneck speed. I don't know why, and I was just like pressing all the capture button and hope to go back and see it later. Yeah,
That a game that supports it? It's only some games that support it, I think.
it shows that it's saving a video. Like
Oh, interesting.
it's a different save icon in the corner of the screen than a plain old screenshot.
I haven't
And
really
it
used
takes
it.
longer to save too.
Right.
Now I haven't gone back and like checked the quality on them yet, but
I
as
don't
far
think
as I can
they're
tell, it's supposed to snatch what the last 30 seconds I think.
up to 30 seconds. I think you can edit it down.
Yeah, I'll check it out later on and see how they came out.
Yeah. It's pretty incredible to me that they added that at all. Like, if it's not in the system when it launches, as far as Nintendo goes, it's like really difficult to imagine it coming later. But like, video capture, post-launch feature, that's pretty good. Okay, so we're approaching time. NeoGAF story, I don't really have, I'm not part of the moderation team, so take this with a grain of salt. But basically, what happened was, I don't know if, I mean, Chad's sort of aware of it, but last October, I guess, there was a revolt. I've been through some internet revolts, like on Dig a couple times and other places. This one was because the administrator was accused of jumping in the shower with a woman while they were sharing a hotel room for like some games conference or something. And it was unwarranted or something like that, obviously, because she had a problem with it. It was her post for the hashtag MeToo movement. For a little bit, obviously, they like the news didn't break on NeoGAF because they were quick to like delete it. But then everybody started to catch on. Everybody left a couple days later. Resetera was formed. In his message to the moderators at the time, the administrator, Evilore, it's basically a big ramble. I need to look up if I can find the copy paste of it. But basically, he says he was in a threesome like relationship. I don't know, like he was like a third partner in this woman's relationship with her husband or boyfriend or whatever. He also went on this tangent about how him and her together on that trip had almost gotten abducted by Scientologists or a Scientology-like cult, where they were going to be like forcibly made sexual slaves or something like that. Basically a whole load of like crazy shit. But I don't know. There wasn't really a huge story there. There's just like a couple details I was able to pick up here and there. But it's, for me, it was crazy seeing that like overnight just like plummet. Like there's like, if you go to NeoGAF today, like if you scroll to the bottom of Off Topic, the last post would probably have been made like a day or two ago. Whereas for like 10 years in NeoGAF's prime, Chad can say this, like it wouldn't be within an hour, basically. You know, it was so active.
Like game developers have said that they would get worried if their game wasn't on the front page of NeoGAF on the first page.
Right. It wasn't as influential as like Metacritic or whatever it is, but like it was a fixture, I would say. Those same game developers, though, I think sometime around like 2009, 2010, they like got pissed at GAF because like after that, most of the developers posting like stopped or quit. I know the Dayak incident probably didn't factor into that at all, but it's kind of humorous on its own.
Yeah. In a strange way, I was kind of happy that NeoGAF died because it was a big time sink.
Mm-hmm.
And getting back that free time was nice, but it was amazing watching it go down. And of course, as the moderation team is leaving NeoGAF, the website is also literally imploding where you can't load it. And of course I was like, man, I wonder where everybody's talking about GAF. And I was like, oh wait, there's this website called The Boar. And I went to The Boar, and on that message board thread, everybody was like, why is everybody here?
Yeah, NeoGAF had a couple spinoffs, but
yeah,
it's kind of funny now that like in the instance of The Boar, like they've outlasted NeoGAF. they're probably not more active than GAF, but it's probably close right now, which is pretty crazy.
Yeah.
I signed up for a Resetter account. I had like the sad thing is like I agree with a lot of like the political push that they're doing, but it's like they go so far and drive it in so deep to every discussion that there isn't any kind of discussion really, in my opinion. Like it's hard to like engage with somebody on Resetter because of the atmosphere. I don't know. It's hard to discuss if you don't really know, if you haven't really checked the site out or anything. I haven't posted yet. I don't think I'm ever going to post there. I'm perfectly happy giving GAF up, giving Resetter up, giving a lot of things up, posting as much as I can on our little corner of the web. But I don't know. Joel, any thoughts here?
My brother was a big visitor to NeoGAF. I know he posted there and managed some of their, you know, like single game threads and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And I think he's moved to Reset Era. Mm-hmm. I poked my head into GAF a little bit. You know, I'd see somebody on Twitter link to a thread or a post or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I think the most use I got out of NeoGAF was like Steam sales. I would scroll through the little cheap recommendations.
Right, right.
And then I think a year or two ago, Amazon and Comixology were doing one of the recent big comic sales. You know, there's piles of Marvel stuff on the cheap, and I would just, hey, here's a thread of recommendations. If you don't know about anything, here are things you should look at. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll buy this, this, and this. There's $30. I'm done. And maybe one day I'll get to reading all those comics.
Yeah.
I've read a little bit, but not as much as I would like.
Yeah, like I'm fine. I have like four series I follow that like I'm subscribed to that I make sure to read the week they come out. But like I also have subscriptions to like a couple where I don't even bother. And now they're like 50 issues deep into the run, and I'm like, no, you know.
Who is like not into the comic world, like all these, you know, we're gonna start over continuity, and oh, here's these stories, and we're gonna turn the world inside out. And, oh, it was all a dream. I can't keep up with it. I'm just gonna wait. In 20 years, I'll go back and I'll start reading some of today's stuff. oh, okay, that's kind of cool. I'll let time figure out what's worth going back to read. Because it's a mess. Like, from the outside looking in, it's a mess.
It's a mess, and there's a lot of, like, there is a lot of, like, decades of, like, you know, history and continuity. Generally, that only factors in, like, if the writer's good, they'll throw in some, like, wink-wink stuff, but generally forge their own path. Most of the Batman books of the New 52 were kind of like that. Keeping up with it on an ongoing basis is interesting, because the toughest part isn't really the continuity or whatever of the storyline. Like, you can get, like, if an arc starts, you get a feel for the characters and, like, their new threat or whatever. The difficult part is, like, remembering what happened in the last issue when the new issue comes out, because TV shows, you know, they have season runs, you know, where they air a new episode every week, and they also do, like, previously on, blah, blah, blah. Whereas comics, most of the time, it's once a month, and it takes probably around 15 minutes to read an issue, maybe less if you're a fast reader. So that's like, you're not getting a whole lot of information each month, and you're also like, it's also like stretched out a lot. The best thing to come out of Rebirth has been they made a lot of their series twice a month. So like Batman, Detective Comics, Superman, Action Comics. I didn't think it was sustainable when they started doing it, but they seem to be making it work somehow. So I can't really complain about that. Okay, I think I'm going to call it quits on this podcast. Expect it Thursday. I think we hit a good amount of topics tonight. And thank you both for showing up.
Alrighty.
Alright. Thanks for hosting.
Say bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.